Chapter 20. In Duluth, a man in khaki shorts and sandals walked up and down Piedmont Avenue with a large smear of ash on his forehead and a hand-lettered sandwich board hanging over his scrawny shoulders. The front read, "The time of the disappearance is here. Christ the Lord returneth soon. Prepare to meet your God." The back read, "Behold, the hearts of the sinners were broken. The great shall be abased, and the abased made great. The evil days are at hand. Woe to thee, O Zion!" Four young men in motorcycle jackets, all of them with bad coughs and runny noses, set upon the man in the khaki shorts and beat him unconscious with his own sandwich board. Then they fled, one of them calling back hysterically over his shoulder, "Teach you to scare people! Teach you to scare people, you half-baked freak!" The highest-rated morning program in Springfield, Missouri, was KLFT's morning phone-in show, Speak Your Peace, with Ray Flowers. He had six phone lines into his studio booth, and on the morning of June 26th, he was the only KLFT employee to show up for work. He was aware of what was going on in the world outside, and it scared him. In the last week or so, it seemed to Ray that everyone he knew had come down sick. There were no troops in Springfield, but he had heard that the National Guard had been called into KC and St. Louis to stop the spread of panic and prevent looting. Ray Flowers himself felt fine. He looked thoughtfully at his equipment, phones, time delay device, racks of commercials on cassettes. "If your toilet overflows and you don't know just what goes, call for the man with the big steel hose, call your clean-out man." And, of course, the mic. He lit a cigarette, went to the studio door and locked it, went into his booth and locked that. He turned off the canned music that had been playing from a tape reel, turned on his own theme music, and then settled in at the microphone. "Hi, y'all," he said. "This is Ray Flowers on Speak Your Peace. And this morning, I guess there's only one thing to call about, isn't there? You can call it Tube Neck or Superflu or Captain Trips, but it all means the same thing. I've heard some horror stories about the Army clamping down on everything, and if you want to talk about that, I'm ready to listen. It's still a free country, right? And since I'm here by myself this morning, we're going to do things just a little bit differently. I've got the time delay turned off, and I think we can dispense with the commercials. If the Springfield you're seeing is anything like the one I'm seeing from the KLFT windows, no one feels much like shopping anyway. So if you're supposed to be up and around, as my mother used to say, let's get going. Our toll-free numbers are 656-8600 and 656-8601. If you get a busy, just be patient. Remember, I'm doing it all myself." There was an army unit in Carthage, 50 miles from Springfield, and a 20-man patrol was dispatched to take care of Ray Flowers. Two men refused the order. They were shot on the spot. In the hour it took them to get to Springfield, Ray Flowers took calls from a doctor who said people were dying like flies and who thought the government was lying through its teeth about a vaccine, a hospital nurse who confirmed that bodies were being removed from Kansas City hospitals by the truckload, a delirious woman who claimed it was flying saucers from outer space, a farmer who said that an army squad with two payloaders had just finished digging a hell of a long ditch in a field near Route 71 south of Kansas City, half a dozen others with their own stories to tell. Then there was a crashing sound on the outer studio door. "Open up," a muffled voice cried. "Open up in the name of the United States." Ray looked at his watch. 11:45. "Well," he said, "it looks like the Marines have landed. But we'll just keep taking calls, shall we?" There was a rattle of automatic rifle fire, and the knob of the studio door fell to the rug. Blue smoke drifted out of the ragged hole. The door was shouldered inward, and half a dozen soldiers, wearing respirators and full battle dress, burst in. "Several soldiers have just broken into the outer office," Ray said. "They're fully armed. They look like they're ready to start a mop-up operation in France 36 years ago, except for the respirators on their faces." "Shut it down," a heavy-set man with sergeant stripes on his sleeves yelled. He loomed outside the broadcast booth's glass walls and gestured with his rifle. "I think not," Ray called back. He felt very cold, and when he fumbled his cigarette out of his ashtray, he saw that his fingers were trembling. "This station is licensed by the FCC, and I'm revoking your fucking license. Now shut down." "I think not," Ray said again, and turned back to his microphone. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been ordered to shut down, and I have refused the order quite properly, I think. These men are acting like Nazis, not American soldiers. I am not...
Last chance!
The sergeant brought his gun up. Sergeant, one of the soldiers by the door said, I don't think you can just... If that man says anything else, waste him, the sergeant said. I think they're going to shoot me, Ray Flowers said, and the next moment the glass of his broadcast booth blew inward, and he fell over his control panel. From somewhere there came a terrific feedback whine that spiraled up and up. The sergeant fired his entire clip into the control panel, and the feedback cut off. The lights on the switchboard continued to blink. Okay, the sergeant said, turning around. I want to get back to Carthage by 1 o'clock, and I don't... Three of his men fired simultaneously, one of them with a recoilless rifle that fired 70 gas-tipped slugs per second. The sergeant did a jigging, shuffling death dance, and then fell backward through the shattered remains of the broadcast booth's glass wall. One leg spasmed, and his combat boot kicked shards of glass from the frame. A PFC, pimple standing out in stark relief on his whey-colored face, burst into tears. The others only stood in stunned disbelief. The smell of cordite was heavy and sickening in the air.
We scragged him, the PFC cried hysterically. Holy God, we done scragged Sergeant Buchan.
No one replied. Their faces were still dazed and uncomprehending, although later they would only wish they had done it sooner. All of this was some deadly game, but it wasn't their game. The phone, which Ray Flowers had put in the amplifier cradle just before he died, gave out a series of squawks.
Ray? You there, Ray?
The voice was tired, nasal.
I listen to your program all the time, me and my husband both, and we just want to say keep up the good work and don't let them bully you. Okay, Ray? Ray? Ray?
In Boulder, Colorado, a rumor that the U.S. Meteorological Air Testing Center was really a biological warfare installation began to spread. The rumor was repeated on the air by a semi-delirious Denver FM disc jockey. By 11 p.m. on the night of June 26th, a vast, lemming-like exodus from Boulder had begun. A company of soldiers was sent out from Denver, Arvada, to stop them, but it was like sending a man with a whisk broom to clean out the Augean stables. Better than 11,000 civilians, sick, scared, and with no other thought but to put as many miles between themselves and the air testing center as possible, rolled over them. Thousands of other Boulderites fled to other points of the compass. At 11:15, a shattering explosion lit the night at the air testing center's location on Broadway. A young radical named Desmond Ramage had planted better than 16 pounds of plastique, originally earmarked for various Midwestern courthouses and state legislatures, in the ATC lobby. The explosive was great. The timer was cruddy. Ramage was vaporized along with all sorts of harmless weather equipment and particle-for-particle pollution measuring gadgets. Meanwhile, the exodus from Boulder went on.